freaking auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
We stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
You know, you'd think that after years of doing this, I would remember to turn down my headphones before Hasselbeck started shouting at me. But no, I forget every week.
I thought you were going to say, like I'm about to say, after years of doing this and listening to those same sound bites for years and years, they still don't get old. Every one of them brings a little, whoa, who's that laugh? Who is that?
Oh, that's, I don't know who that is.
Hello.
Oh, it's Howdy.
I said good morning, Gil. Geez.
Oh, no. We traded Kyle for Howdy for this week. I would say we downgraded, but such as...
Big upgrade. Big mid-season upgrade. Mid-season edition.
Hey, you know, I went... I saw your uncle became a celebrity.
Yes, he did.
While you were gone.
Yeah, I heard about it
did
on
you
the
hear
Corey
about
Monson
this,
show.
Oh, did I?
Uncle Mike.
By the shirt collar, just body slammed.
So Uncle Mike, owner of Sazio's Produce in the market, became a bit of a local celebrity last week or 2 weeks ago when he cornered a thief in the market. Right? He ran him down, essentially.
Yeah, there
right?
was, it was 4:30 in the morning. A thief walked into his safe while he was around the corner Ooh. Pulling some of his produce in,
yeah.
was pulling money bags out of his safe.
So he had left the safe open?
It's 4:30 in the morning. It's him and security. And he was gone for 3 minutes.
Mike.
He comes around the corner.
Right.
And guy's Thief. Pulling bags out, and he said, I'm not doing this anymore.
Okay, so he got him.
And so he went after him.
Right.
He threw stuff down, and he went after him.
Throwing
laid on
peaches
him.
And tomatoes at him, no
Guy
doubt.
Took off, and he chased right. him down, pulled him to the ground. Security right. swarmed him. Got the money back.
So good story. And yeah, he was on the Dory Monson show on our sister station, 97.3, which was great, Cairo FM. And so I went down to the market this weekend, Brock.
Uh-huh.
Because, yeah, I had to take the kids out for a little while. Heather had some taxes to work on, stuff like that. So I took the kids down to the market, figured we'd pick up some fish and pick up some produce. Always love going down and see Uncle Mike. And we get there, and he's not there, which is strange on a Sunday. I mean, usually you see him there sort of like a prime day at the market. It was packed down there.
Yeah.
And so I asked, and they said, now, I don't know, I can't vouch for the truth of this, but they said that he now won't talk to anybody. He's now such a big celebrity that he won't even work at the stand anymore. He leaves that to the underlings, and he now believes that he's like some sort of superhero.
Sure.
He lives like in a lair now.
Well, he's in the Pike Place Market Ring of Honor. He basically hawk tackled the guy like Cam Chancellor. So, yeah, I mean, he's in a different stratosphere.
Well,
now.
And the crazy thing is now that Carlos Dunlap's not coming back, he might end up being the next defensive end for the Seahawks, which is really the kicker for the whole thing.
His knees are just about as good as Bruce Irvin's.
There
anymore.
We go. All right. So, congratulations to Uncle Howdy. He was not there. I don't know. Maybe he was in his lair. Maybe he was just getting lunch. It's hard to say.
Do you even recognize Howdy after 3 weeks
no.
away?
Well, especially not now because he's got this like curl. Thing in his hair going he looks like he's in a 90s rock band. It's crazy.
Yeah,
like I
feel like I'm in a 90s rock band. Like I've been walking around with so much more swag
yeah.
after soaking in all that vitamin D for the past few weeks.
Right.
Ooh,
how tan is he?
Not
3 weeks in Hawaii. You gotta
not
be tan.
I'm a little tan.
Nope, you're not even a little tan.
I'm a little bit tan.
You're pale. You look arguably more pale than when you left. Growing a little bit of a beard stubble does not equate it to a tan. I mean, it does. It is darker than your skin because it's hair, but I wouldn't call it a tan. I've never heard of anybody going to Hawaii for 3 weeks and coming back whiter than when he left. That's impossible. Howdy, you're a unique individual. You are special, and it's good to have you back. Did you know we're almost ready for baseball season here?
Yeah, I definitely know that. I am very excited for some baseball.
Are you?
I am very intrigued.
Were you even here for the Mather stuff, or were you gone
no,
for all of that? Oh, my
I
God, you've been gone forever.
I followed it, but I was gone for that.
You weren't even here for Mather.
I listened to the podcast. I uploaded it for you. I heard the whole conversation. I made some promos while I was gone. I was around for it, but
you missed all of it.
I was not in the city for it.
Wow. Were people talking about it in Hawaii? I went to Hawaii the last time, and it was the day of the insurrection.
Oh,
I left on January 6th. No one there was. It was as if it hadn't happened, right? No televisions are talking. Nobody in the entire island is talking about it. Was anybody there talking about Mr. Mather?
Yeah, no.
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 All right.
Not too much.
You never know what you're going to find, Brock. All right, well, then let me do this to get us ready properly for baseball season. We do this every year, right around now, sometimes right before spring training, but it's podcast, no rules. I have the top six Mariner storylines for 2021. Are you ready, Brock?
I am ready. Right, go ahead. Drum roll, howdy, please.
Number one storyline for the Mariners this year. This is year six for Jerry and Scott.
Is it really?
It's year six.
I believe that that Scott Servais is the fourth most tenured major league manager.
I believe number two in the American League, probably behind Bob Melvin, right?
Melvin, yes. There was one more, but
in the American League,
yeah, I have to look it
up. Ooh,
again.
All right, interesting. All right, so but whatever, he's top four in terms of tenure in the big leagues. I would be willing to bet that the people in 26 of the 30 city, whatever it is, couldn't recognize him if they were in a room with him. He's done it very quietly, right, with a nervous laugh and everything else. And apparently now Logan Gilbert sounds just like him, which is crazy. We'll have to play some of that. But he and Jerry have now been here for 6 years, and they're both up for contracts this year, Brock. So question that I think should be on everyone's minds over the course of the year is, do they deserve them? Do they deserve the new contracts that they're going to want? And by the way, can you ask them to preach their slogan, right? Patience is the shortcut. That's what's written in the Mariners' hallways there on their offices. Patience is the shortcut. Can you ask them to do that without a contract extension beyond this year?
Well, they've gone 5 years without a winning season, correct?
No. They had a winning season.
They had a couple winning seasons.
They had two winning seasons?
Yeah, remember they missed the playoffs by a couple of years. They've had a few
couple games over 500. Yeah,
they've had a couple of winning seasons.
Yes. They've not made the playoffs in 5 years. John Stanton and crew have been very, very patient with him. When did Stanton take over ownership? That was midway through their terms. This now Stanton's...
It was a year or two in.
Yes. So this is probably Stanton's third, fourth year. In many ways, I think that's been advantageous for Jerry and Scott, right? As they've turned over the ownership, as they've turned over this roster, as they've been given ample time and opportunity to build this thing and to do what others before them were never able to do.
Would you give Jerry a contract extension right now?
I got to see this year play out.
Why? What do you have to see this year? What are you going to see this year that's going to change your mind?
Kyle Lewis, Evan White, J.P. Crawford. I mean, pieces, significant young pieces that showed flashes. Rookie of the Year, a couple gold gloves, showed flashes.
So if they don't look great this year,
if Kyle Lewis regresses in the beginning of year two, you're not willing to
extend Jerry DePoto because of that?
If they all take a step back, Kyle Seager's a free agent.
If they take a step back, is that a Jerry thing or a Scott thing? Oh. Dead silence on the other end.
Fair question.
Yeah.
You're in a really tough position judging these guys' growth in a year, but I'm kind of with Brock. I mean, I can paint a scenario where every one of those guys falls short of expectations.
Yep.
Jared Kelnick comes up and doesn't light the world on fire, which is mostly likely.
Think about this rationally. Your point makes some sense. I get it. But the other side of this is, a rookie comes up at age 22 or whatever he is and doesn't wow you, so you fire the GM. That doesn't even make a little bit of sense.
But you've extended Evan White.
Yeah.
You've given now J.P. Crawford ample time. He's 26 years of age. Kyle Lewis was a rookie of the year that has battled through some injuries. He's not a young man anymore. I'm not judging it on Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelnick and those young guys, but I'm judging it on those three that in some ways have to be cornerstone pieces for you moving forward, that have to be a part of this story, that have to be on Jerry DePoto's resume traded for J.P. Crawford, gave him time, invested a lot of time and energy in him. Evan White, drafted him in the first round, gave him a contract before he was ever a major leaguer. Kyle Lewis was one of our preeminent picks. I mean, those guys, Mike, have to be... They can't be average players.
I understand that. Well, some of them can. I mean, look, Jay, we're going to get to some of these guys and some of the other storylines where there's a little bit more room to expand on them. But J.P. Crawford doesn't need to hit 280 in order to be a good player. He can be at the bottom of the order as a gold glove style shortstop, which he's already proven he is. And if the other guys come around, it doesn't matter. Kyle Lewis had a rookie of the year campaign. We're going to talk about whether or not he can build on that or not. But whether he takes a step back in year two, to me, is immaterial. He could take a step back and then get better in year three. That's not like unheard of at all for players to have a moment in their sophomore season where the league catches up with them, they start to game plan for him, and all of a sudden, you know, he takes a step back before making his own adjustments. So I don't know. It's hard for, like, the years on Scott and Jerry are funky. Yes, it's 6 years, but the first, what, three or four of them, the first three were trying to compete with a roster that wasn't good enough because that's what ownership wanted.
Yep.
That's not their fault. They did what they could and by all accounts, brought in a lot of the right guys. I mean, I think you can criticize some
Macho
of what
Quattro, correct?
You can bring, I mean, you can criticize some of, that's pre them, I think, isn't it?
Are you sure?
No. Started pre them. But,
started pre them, but I think they were all
there. I guess maybe that's true. Yeah. But you can you can certainly criticize some of Jerry's moves. They have not been perfect, nor should they be. I mean, like,
they were rough in the first 3 years of trying to build a competitive team.
Yeah, as he was.
There were very few players in the veteran window that they brought in that actually exceeded
that really pushed them over the top. And I think that's sort of the funky thing about Jerry and Scott. And I, like, I love both of them. I really appreciate what both of them have done, and I can't imagine letting either of them go right now. I would give them extensions, but I think the question is for each of them to prove Brock is not whether or not they can develop these players this year. I don't think that's the question about either of them. I think we know that Scott Servais is a good manager for young players. I think he's done a great job building the culture for young players, and you saw that evidence of it last year, that one of the youngest, if not the youngest team in the league, didn't make errors, didn't play stupid baseball. That is a testament to the manager and what he has done to create the right culture for those guys. I don't know yet, and I'm not saying he can't do it, I don't know yet how Scott goes for the jugular, right, and how he takes a group of veteran players and makes the moves to put them over the top. That's the thing he still has to prove. For Jerry, I think it's very similar. Jerry's done a fantastic job, I think, almost inarguable. He's done a fantastic job of building up a youth movement with a ton of really impressive young talent. I was looking at the according to the MLB Pipeline one, Jason Churchill was tweeting this, so I just noticed it. The Mariners have the four top prospects in their division. 1, 2, 3, and 4. And 6 of the top 12. Okay, like, that's just one. Keith Law had it a little differently. He had them at, like, 1, 2, 6, and 7, right? I mean, they're all going to be a little bit different. But according to one of the three major ways of looking at this, they have the top four prospects in their division, and he's taken a number 30-ranked farm system and put it into the top five.
Yep.
So Jerry is clearly good at this.
And he's put it in the top five, not by just filling it with a bunch of names at the bottom of the list.
No, legit top end talent.
Bally the everything up. Yep. No, real serious elite-level talent.
So he can clearly do that, right? Unbelievable. What we don't know yet about Jerry, and very much the same as Scott, can he take a good team and make it great? Because he didn't do that the last time. He took a good team and left it good. And that's still the question mark to ask about Jerry. But are we at the good to great stage? Maybe. Maybe at the end of this year, that is where we're going to be. And maybe that's why you leave the Jerry question open, to kind of see what his plan is moving forward. But I feel like the culture has been moved in the right direction. I know that sounds nuts because of what just happened in the last few weeks with Mather, but it certainly wasn't because of Servais and DePoto. I think everything they've done has been really helpful towards the Mariners culture.
So do you think both of these men have leverage? Because ultimately, if you want to get a contract done, you want extension, you've got to kind of have leverage, as we just saw with Dak Prescott.
Well, I think it's a good question. I mean, the whole Theo question has to play a role in it. I think they have a little bit more leverage than most would think. Only because how many prime big name candidates are desperate for the Mariners job given what just happened?
Yeah.
Like, it's not like, hey, you know, let's go get the biggest name, the biggest potential GMs. Hey, where do you want to start your GM career? Oh, in Seattle. I don't.
And even before that, was it like there was a bunch of executives always knocking down their door? Did they always have the list of the top five available guys that they were going to interview for their president GM positions? That was never the case in any of their searches. So you already start from that spot and then move backwards with corporate culture.
Now, I could argue that in a year, you may have the ability to completely change that. If you bring in the right president, that it completely opens up the field. And maybe because of that, you don't want to tie yourself down. But I don't like the idea of these guys going into their lame duck year. I mean, my preference, if I were in ownership, would be to extend each by a year or two so that I'm not. Yeah, but you know, I don't know if I'm Scott. I'm not saying yes to that. 1 year? No, thank you. What, so that you can get rid of me as soon as everybody, you know, as soon as this comes due and the guys are ready to go? Yeah, I think you got to determine over the course of this season how you want to commit to those guys.
Baseball is funky, though. I mean, Eric Wedge bet on himself, and where's Eric Wedge? Right. I mean, how many of these opportunities do come around? How often? This is year six for Scott, that he's got a lot invested, especially in so many of these young pieces that they say, hey, okay, here's another year. All right, let's go. Let me take my chances and continue to grow and develop this young team. I just don't know how much power or leverage or control they have to really wield either.
I think I would extend both. And I think the big reason is that what happened, and this is early, right? This is still a storyline for the year, but I think what happened to both of them the last time is that it wasn't their guys. I mean, they were asked to go good to great with mostly not their guys. And that's not to say that those guys were problem children or anything. But Felix Hernandez, Robbie Cano, Kyle Seager. Nelson Cruz obviously is anybody's
right,
guy.
But
those weren't their guys, right?
James Paxton.
You remember the last time you did this?
I think Nelson Cruz actually was their guy.
I think a lot of people listening maybe right now on this podcast, like, will you shut up to storyline two, please?
Oh, sorry about that.
Because the last time you pushed for contract extension, you remember what happened?
No, I don't.
Right off the cliff.
Oh, I do remember that.
They were like 20-4.
Sign them, and then it all disappeared.
Oh, we did it. We made it. Signed contracts. Lost 18-20.
That was end of June. They were 10 games up in the division. Yeah, whatever they were.
That's true. That did happen.
Way to go.
All right, fire them both. Let's see what happens. All right. Storyline number two here. The real youth arrives, Brock. The real youth. They're coming. They are on their way. We just don't know exactly when yet. We can have a little conversation about that. But Kelnick and Gilbert will both play for the Mariners this year. Maybe it's April 1st when they open the season. Maybe it's later in the year. But Kelnick and Gilbert will both play for the Mariners this year. That is the real youth movement.
And Cal Raleigh, I'd probably put on that list too.
You think he'll play this year?
End of the year. I think by the end of the year, and just age and who you have at catcher and everything else.
Kudos to, I think it was Brent Stecker for pointing out his Jim Thome like swing.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Great call.
He's got a lot of Jim Thome in that swing. Yeah. Jim Thome's probably one of my five favorite swings of all time. I mean, I love watching Jim Thome hit.
Pretty awesome.
It's awesome. Now, I don't know if he's going to be as good as Thome. That's Hall of Fame material. But this kid has a pretty nice swing, Cal Raleigh.
Yep. Yeah, you're not going to see, I think, with this injury. And by the way, this is one of many injuries that I have suffered in my life. I thought I tore a knee ligament.
Oh.
I was doing step-ups, and I was like, this was a couple years ago. And I was like, oh my gosh. I had never hurt my knee in my life. I'm like, I think I just tore my knee. Like, I can't. My knee is killing. I could not walk. It was actually, I think, during kind of training camp time. I remember trying to walk across the field to catch the plane for a preseason game. And my buddy Sam's like, what is wrong with you? I'm like, I think I tore like MCL or something. No, it was actually the adductor muscle that goes from your groin area, connects all the way down to the side of your knee. So when he has a sprained knee, like sprained knee and adductor, how does that even work? Yeah, that muscle is attached all the way up. And for a guy of his strength and, you know, what he one-legged squats and squats and lunges and how
1,000-pound squats.
Yeah, so strong.
800-pound deadlifts.
Yeah, that adductor can pull away. I mean, you've got to be careful now because that thing pulls away and rips away from your knee, rolls up. It's a lost year. This is not going to be a 7-day injury. Those guys know what's at stake here.
Good.
And you hate core injuries, right? You hate, you know, the oblique.
I don't care for them, no.
Yes. Well, this is right below the oblique that attaches there at your pubis area that then connects all the way down to your knee. I said pubis area.
I just still said easy.
Jeez, why?
What do you mean,
I'm talking medically right now, for crying out
but
loud.
But you're not a doctor.
Kind of. I was pre-med for 3 years at Washington.
Uh-huh. That's very much the same as being
a doctor.
I've
had enough anatomy injuries.
I also played high school football. I played in the NFL. Yes.
You stayed at Holiday Inn Express.
Point being, Jared Kelnick is not starting the season.
No.
That is a significant injury. And if you're not
good,
if you're not patient with it, it is going to be just a pain throughout the entire season.
That's a stride injury too, right? Like
yes.
The way you're describing all of that.
Yes.
For a hitter, that's a big deal.
Couple of thoughts on this. One, Brock, you and Jessica Mendoza turns out have a little bit in common. Did you watch the game on ESPN last week when it was on?
No.
I had a little time. I was watching Kyle and I were on like a Teams call together and just both watched. And like every time Kyle or something came up that hold on. And then, but I was like 8 seconds.
Well, you know, we worked
him.
Together, right? You know, Mendoza and I worked a couple yeah, seasons together.
I did know football. That. Yeah, so she sort of had this, I was dying of laughter. She was like, okay, he came up and she had like a whole thing planned for Kelnick. She's good, by the way. I think she does a good job. And she had a whole thing planned for Kelnick. And then he swung at the first pitch and flew out or something. She was like, well, thanks a lot, Jared, because actually I had a whole package here that I was going to run. And
yes.
Anyway, when she got to it, it was all about like his quads and like the just force of like the midsection of, yep. of like his upper legs and all that. And I was just laughing at you and your buff dudes report every
oh,
year
yeah.
of spring training.
Could you imagine if I was down there?
Oh
no. Thank God you're not.
I'd spend a day on the hamstrings. Then I go to his glutes. Then I go to his thighs. And then I look at the deltoids. I mean, it would be a full week of nothing but buff dude report on Jared. And by the way, I think he would model it for me.
Yeah, I think he'd like
based
that.
On what I have seen, I think yeah. he would stand by our picnic table and say, oh, what do you want to see today? Shirt on, shirt off? I think he would be right there with me.
I'd love to get more eyes on Julio Rodriguez and see a little bit because he's so long and lean. I'd like to kind of see what that looked
like. You know Brock would be standing next to that guy all the time.
Like measuring
he has
height.
A little lean. He's, you know how he does that 2 foot lean yes. where he stands next to somebody yes. and leans 2 feet each direction? So at some points in time, he's 6 inches from the person he's standing next and sometimes 4 feet, and it's his way to sort of like sway in and out of evaluation. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. He'd be doing that to Julio Rodriguez
all day.
Every day.
All day.
Every day.
So that's first point on Kelnick. Point two. Do not let this guy back 1 millisecond before he's fully healed.
Correct.
What are we talking about? I gotta say, this whole conversation about Jared Kelnick and service time, I'm out on all of it. I am 100% out. Look, Kevin Mather screwed up. He said the quiet part out loud. Never should have done it. It's a disaster, and he paid the price for it, as he should have. Okay? End of story. Part two. This is the same Mariners organization, right, that for years has been criticized for bringing guys up too early because they wanted to impress the fans and give people something to talk about from a PR standpoint. Now we're going to criticize them for not bringing a guy up and making sure that he's 100% ready? No, thank you. I am out on that. I don't care about his service. I mean, I do. I don't mind service time manipulation. I'll just go ahead and say it. Bellevue Rotary Club or not, like... That's what's in the best interest of the club. That's what you do when you... Now, you don't have to talk about it, but like, that's what you do when you're the club. We've talked about this a million times. You can go back and check the record on this. I'm not going to change my mind just because Kevin Mather got himself in trouble.
If players got an issue with it, go negotiate in your next collective bargaining agreement, which is right around the corner.
That's right. That's the rules of the game.
Yeah, so yep.
Don't say it. That was dumb. But do it. Like, yeah, all right. If you want to, like, which is better? A month of Kelnick in a season where you're likely not going to win the World Series, or a year of him in a year where you might? Yep. This isn't even a conversation, right? Now, there are other ways to get around it. I know that it's a deeper conversation with that, but I don't mind that. What I do mind is bringing a guy up before he's ready and potentially ruining the best thing you have. You got to make sure he's ready.
Yeah, and by the way, if someone really wants to be ticked off about this... Jared got run out. It's all Jared, and Jared is beautiful, body beautiful, hits the ball unbelievably hard, is incredibly gifted, talented. He absolutely robbed and de-pants the Mets and everything else. But if someone wants to be upset about it, Logan Gilbert has probably a lot more argument. He is a lot more polished. He's older, mm-hmm. right? So this kind of hamstrings him much more than it does at the age where Jared is at.
Was Jared 22?
Yeah.
I mean, it's hard to make too serious an argument that you're being held back in your ages 21 and 22 season. I mean, like, there are a few special guys that make it at that age, but certainly there's no argument to say, like, oh, that's ridiculous. Of course he's ready.
This specific situation's a little different than the general one, considering you have a lot of young guys that you are bringing up that you aren't as worried about service
time with. But with him, he's younger.
The guys in front of him are terrible and have been terrible.
But are,
you
or
know
are,
he'd be better.
But are older. I mean, like, he's just younger, and you've got to be careful with him. You can't allow this to dust. You can't, not Dustin Ackley is not a good example, but you can't allow this to Brandon Morrow, Mike Zunino. There's a few other guys who they just brought up too early. You can't allow that to happen. He's not a college player. He came out of high school. He's had barely any at bat. Like, you've got to make sure that when he comes up, he's ready. I think that's really important. And then add even more so if there's even a threat of lingering injury. Like, no, just go sit down. We'll see you when we're ready. So, all right, number three. Storyline number three, bro.
Sheesh. You better hurry this up a little bit.
I could go all day on it. I'm so excited for baseball season. Storyline three. Three veterans in three very different phases of life. Seager, Marco Gonzalez, and Mitch Haniger. Oof. You've got the overpaid leader who's about to depart. That's Kyle Seager, overpaid, according to Kevin Mather. You've got the boring leader, who's now the unofficial captain, and Marco Gonzalez, again, boring, according to Mr. Mather. And then you've got arguably the best player on the team right now in Mitch Haniger, who doesn't even know half of his teammates because they've all arrived since the last time he's played with this team. So how do each of these three guys adapt to their new roles? And which ones are still here by August 1st?
Yeah, if there was a macho quattro before, what is that triumvirate? How would you...
They're loosely connected, yes. I would say.
Yes.
Only loosely.
Yeah, you're right, though. I mean, that is the veteran core. Those are your three that I think if you talk to people behind the scenes, which you've done a little bit, Mike, I think everybody behind the scenes, not named in this case Kevin Mather, would say Marco took some legitimate steps. Kyle took some legitimate, significant, selfless steps of some leadership last year in a year where they really leaned into him as one of the only veterans on that team. And you credit all the rookies for playing hard and playing good, clean ball. Well, doesn't a slice of that pie got to go to the guy at third base who had a career year in many ways, maybe not statistically, but as far as his leadership and some of his selflessness, and Marco wants to be a bulldog. Well, here you go. Go at it again. It was a shortened season a year ago, but you were out there with each and every start and you want this. Go take the ball and go run with it. And for Mitch, it's all about his health. I mean, we can talk pubis area with Kelnick, but it's all about Mitch's health and his ability, you know, to post each and every day.
We really can't again. Like, no, we can't do that. We're just going to not do that again.
Okay.
It's going to be a new rule for the Broncos.
Why can't you have a little fun every once in a while?
Gosh. Well, I don't think it's a fun day. I don't know if that's how I would describe
it. Gosh, you're getting so old. It used to be fun.
I think I can still. Yeah, I don't think this is related to fun. Yes. Yeah, no, it's not that. No, it's not a fun
Mitch day. Playing for his career, man. Yeah. All of those guys are, but especially Mitch. Mitch is playing to prove that, man, I was the all-star. I'm a very, very talented guy. I know you got all these young rookies on the rise, and they're all gifted, and a rookie of the year, and the superstar Kelnick that's you know, very, very gifted. But remember, I went to an all-star game. Remember, when I'm right, I can be, you know, according to, wasn't Mitch Haniger that Jerry told us could be a star? I mean, a legitimate star in this game?
They had some real comps to George Springer with Mitch.
Yep.
No, I don't. I was always a little you know, that was a little much for me. I think the world of Springer. I think he is one.
How much their style of game matches?
Well, just that some of the numbers compared, and look, maybe they did. I think Springer is a pretty elite player, but
he had a high strikeout, right?
When Haniger gets it going, you know, we've seen how he can carry a team. He's got that kind of ability to carry a team for short stretches, and if he could figure out the consistency and grow into it and stay healthy. But he's a five-tool guy. So, look, I'm curious to see which of these three guys is still here on August 1st. I think Marco is. They seem to be committed to that. He's at a reasonable price. He can pitch forever with his style. So, all right, Marco is. Seager and Haniger, I think, are interesting questions. So,
yep.
All right, what happens with these three veterans? That's storyline three.
Oh, do you think Mitch is intense right now? Like, right this moment, he's doing.
Was smoldering.
Weird. So weird that day. He was so intense.
Smoldering.
I hope we don't have sound of that. Like that was weird. Because he's always so nice. Like, he's a super friendly guy. But he was like boring holes in us with his eyes.
Yes.
That was a lot. That really was a lot. Bugged me.
That may have been the closest we came, and it wasn't even like a brawl. But if something was said wrong, if there was a spark that could have started a forest fire.
Jim Rome situation?
Yes.
With Mitch Haniger?
Call me one more time. You call me that one more time.
We didn't call him anything. We were super nice to him. We were like,
I mean,
so,
I know the Bobby Wagner.
Tell
name
me about your life and what you're doing. And like, it was super,
yes.
Super friendly, except he was just locked in.
Seriously, if we had anybody that intensely mad sitting with us ever in 11 years, ever, ever. I mean, Schneider wasn't happy with me that day that I kind of insinuated about Peyton Manning. he wasn't real thrilled. But I don't think we'd ever had anybody that intense. Bobby Wagner, get your name out of my mouth or something like that.
He wasn't that mad.
No, he wasn't. He kind of giggled at that.
I mean, I think screwed Mitch, up my think, words, but he wasn't mad at me.
I think
me
Mitch was
it.
The most intense anger that we have ever sat with in our
Kyle Seager off the field was cream out of you.
Was he?
Yeah, a little bit. All right. Number four. Number four here. Sneaky competition. Essentially, can they sneak into competition this year? Ahead of schedule. Could they prove everyone wrong, ride the youth and a little bit of attitude to a playoff bid? They probably don't have the pitching, right? They almost definitely don't have the bullpen. But they do have a lineup that could kind of sneak up on you in a division that isn't what it once was. So could they just get ahead of the curve a little bit? A bunch of things break right, and the next thing you know, they put themselves in position and have to add at the deadline instead of trade, right? It's not inconceivable that they could get that.
That will all be about their starting pitching. If they're going to be sneaky competitive, it's going to have to be all about the starting pitching. That six-man rotation and Justin Dunn and the strides he's made at the bottom end of it and Marco at the top end of it and James Paxton stays healthy and Kikuchi can control and command. And if they're going to be sneaky competitive, it's going to be all about that starting pitching because, as you said, that bullpen is still a work in progress. You're still going to give the ball to, as you did a year ago, in many games that are competitive, and then they don't get competitive. So that starting pitching is, if they're going to be, in my opinion, if they're going to be sneaky competitive, that side of it is going to take a step forward more than anybody else.
I'm with you, Brock. I think if this team is going to be good, their starting rotation has more promise to me. I'd be really surprised if their lineup was one that carried them to winning games.
There's just not a ton of pop. I mean, Kyle Lewis at times, and he had 11 home runs in a shortened season last year. J.P. Crawford had two a year ago, and I hate looking at these numbers from a year ago because it was such a shortened season. But as far as, you know, kind of legitimate just pop that can change a game, and there's a three-run homer that you're just going to win now. You kind of look around that diamond. That's not necessarily Ben Evan White. That's not necessarily Kyle Seager. That's not in your outfield. Maybe Mitch. Maybe Mitch has a 30 home run season and adds some of that. But I think it's starting pitching. If you're going to compete, if I learned one thing in 6 years of sitting with Scott, you know, that's what he is going to hang his hat on. That's what Jerry believes in, is equally yoked with him, as that pitching is going to be the separator.
Yeah, I agree that you don't have that huge bopper, but I think that it could be a little bit more of a grinded out lineup than you guys do. I guess I'm a little more bullish on it. And honestly, the one name, maybe this sounds ridiculous, but this may be my Vinny Catricala moment. Uh-oh. Years from now. I was like, can you believe you thought that guy was going to be a difference maker? Like how he once did about Vincat. I got my eyes wide open on Ty France.
Yeah, you do.
That dude can hit.
Yep.
He can just flat out hit. I don't know if he can play the field. We'll talk about him in a sec. But like, that dude can hit.
How big do you think he is, by the way? Huh? I looked this up. How big do you think Ty France is?
I don't know.
5'11", 217.
Yeah, that sounds right.
27 years old in July.
Yeah.
Had a war of 1.0 last year. Last year, do you realize he hit? Do you see a slash from last year? 305, 368, 468. Yeah. OPS of 837. OPS plus of 133.
Dude can hit. He's the all-time leader in Cactus League OPS as of like a week ago. So that dude can hit.
He's also a 34th round pick out of college.
I know.
As a favor in San Diego, because played at San Diego State.
He also can't field. So that's another conversation you got to have about him. But he can hit. He can really, really hit. I think your catching position is going to be better than most in terms of how it hits. You know, White is a conversation. Kyle Lewis has some. Look, it's going to take some things going the right way, as we said earlier. But I could see them having an interesting year sneaking up on people. All right, storyline number five. We've been sort of flirting around it, is the Mather effect. How does it hang over them? How do the fans react to it? Do they bond with the team? Like, is there something where the fans and players kind of connect over their shared dislike of the now deposed president? Or is this like a turnoff for people and they have difficulty coming in? I don't know which direction that goes. What names emerge to replace them? We'll be talking about that throughout the year. Does this affect how they spend money at the deadline or into free agency? Does the team itself draw closer over, Brock, where they have a common enemy, like in Major League or something like that? Like, does it affect Jerry and Scott's ability to govern in the clubhouse and in free agency or trade market, et cetera? How many ways does the Mather thing affect them over the course of the year?
What movie did I walk out of, Molly and I? What movie in our lives? We bought a ticket.
Eyes Wide Shut.
Yep.
Got it. Did you know that, Howdy?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Eyes Wide. I had no idea. We just, on a whim, we're like, oh, this is Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman. And like halfway through, we're like, yep, we're out. This is, well, I don't even know what this is, but right. We're out. Oh, this is art. This is some form of art, but we were out on that. Oh, so instead of Eyes Wide Shut.
Sex, like disguised as art.
Pretty much. Instead of Eyes Wide Shut, this is Eyes Wide Open. Every single move now, Mike, I think for the fans, those players in the clubhouse, heck, even for Scott to some degree, eyes and ears are wide open. That's what this, more than anything to me, is cultivated and created. Okay, you're making this move. Is this because this is for the best interest of us winning, or is this in your best interest for the club of saving money? Is this for the best interest of us winning, or is this for the best interest of your control? Is this for the best interest of us winning, or is this in the best interest of you just PR for the fans? I think ears and eyes are wide open with the moves that are going to be made. If you are sneaky competitive, storyline number four, what are you going to do in June? What are you going to do in July? What are you going to do to add to that? What moves are you going to make to help us win if we are indeed sneaky competitive? Or are you not going to do anything? Because, well, you know, this is really not about winning. It's about, you know, being good and trying to get some people. How aggressive are you going to be with the state of Washington and with the leadership in the state to get some fans into the stands? Is that going to be an important piece of this at all? Because some of your competitors in your division, especially down in Texas, you're going to be playing in front of some mm-hmm. fans and around the country. So I think it's just I don't think it's an everyday Kevin Mather's going to be brought up, a big emotional push. It is a grind of a season.
It's
lurking around the decisions, and I think eyes and ears are wide open.
Finally, number six here, and Brock, it's time to separate the wheat from the chaff, so to speak.
Ooh, okay.
You know me, I'm a big farmer.
Big time.
Big time farmer.
You are. You're a handy.
Done a lot of farming in my days.
Born in the wrong time.
You're a green thumb.
FarmersOnly.com.
Uh-huh.
Right.
You and Howdy. It's why you all took down that tree.
Mennonite.
See, we think Howdy went to Hawaii for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
He was in the county jail after chopping down that tree in the middle of the night.
It's too bad. Make or break time, man. You got a bunch of guys, and you brought this up earlier, Brock. You got to find out. You got a lot of guys who right now are currently one-dimensional, and you got to find out whether or not they have the other dimension, right? Can Crawford hit? I know he can field. Can he get on base enough to be a major league play, like a good major league play? He's a major leaguer, but like a good guy who helps you win. Exactly the same for Evan White right now. I know he can field. Both guys won gold gloves last year. I know he can field. Can he hit? Can he get on base? Can he have some pop, enough pop to play first base? Okay, I got to find out.
Yep.
I know Ty France can hit. We just talked about it. Does he have a position or is this a DH? Can he hit enough to be a DH full time? Mm-hmm. Or can he play some third base to allow you to see what happens with Seager? Can he play? I can't see him playing second base, but we'll throw it out there. I mean, everything I've heard is he can stand at third base. Okay. Can he play third base? That's sort of the next question for him. Can Shed Long do anything well enough? I mean, he was supposed to be a guy who could hit, but maybe had some fielding issues. Last year, he actually fielded okay, but he didn't hit. So what is Shed Long, and what are we going to find out there? Is Kikuchi even a major leaguer? Like, what is that guy? I'm very down on Yusei Kikuchi, but others are not, and others say he throws hard left side, and there's something there. Are either of these young catchers part of your plan, whether it's Murphy or you mentioned Raleigh, Terenz, like, or do any of those guys emerge as potentially your catcher of the future? And then, yeah, throw Kyle Lewis in there, too, just to determine what kind of player he is. Is he the guy who started last year like a house of fire? Or the guy who, you know, he wasn't as bad as Howdy thought he was when he completely screwed up his stats midway through the year.
Yeah, he gave him a zero war.
Which was untrue.
It was 1.7.
It was just wrong. But he wasn't the same player at that point that he had started off as. So what kind of adjustments does he make as the league prepares for him? I think you've got some real wheat and chaff separating going on with this team this year.
Sure do. And it looks like we're going to have 160-some games figured out, unlike a year ago in a shortened year where there was lots of explanations you could make and you could maybe hide at some points in a marathon of a baseball season of what's to come and still through some adversity. It's not in the clear. You're still going to have to be nimble. You're still going to have to probably have some schedule adjustments. You're going to have to persevere through some things. You're absolutely right. Here it is, all in front of you. And that is absolutely, I'm sure, the message that Scott Servais and his coaches give to those players is, hey man, this is the big leagues and you're going to have an opportunity. This is still a year here where you're going to have an opportunity to really show what you can do. And there are going to be a lot of ABs for a lot of these guys, Mike, to help answer that question.
It's winnowing time, Brock.
It's what?
It's winnowing time.
It is.
It is.
Okay.
Do you know what that means?
Winnowing. It's just one wing?
No, winnowing.
Okay. Oh, winnowing.
Winnowing.
Oh, I thought
farming
you were
term.
No, I got you. I'm sorry. I thought you were getting to separate the wheat from the chaff. Yeah, I thought you were getting to your barbecue read with a winnowing.
Winnowing. It's, hopefully it's winning time, but it's also winnowing time.
It was a play on words, Brock.
Right.
Got you.
It's winnowing.
Yep.
Winnowing time.
I know what that means. I grew up on the farm
in
Puyallup. Yeah, sure. I love the farm barn down there at the Puyallup Fair. I'd look at the Clydesdales and the cattle and the pigs and the pork and all of it. So sure,
it is a winnowing farm. Is that part of a farm? Hmm. Like, what are Clydesdales for?
Oh yeah,
pulling
yeah.
things.
They're very
really
very
strong.
Large
right.
animals.
I mean, yes. they're not fast, right? You're not racing them.
No,
or anything.
No, they're pulling stuff, man.
Are yeah. they for pulling?
Yeah.
Sure, that sounds good.
Yeah, that sounds right.
You don't see a lot of Clydesdales anymore.
No, unless you're a Budweiser commercial,
right?
Or in a horse show.
Have you been by one in person?
A Clydesdale?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Holy smokes.
I think I might have seen them
yikes.
In St. Louis for the World
they
Series.
They are just gigantic.
Why are they so big?
Big and strong, man. That's your
Scottish
DH.
Scottish breed of draft horse.
Oh, maybe yep. if I were in Scotland, I'd see more of them. Maybe that's it. We're just not close enough to Scotland to run into
I
enough Clydesdales
so.
In the wild. All right. Yeah, Brock, you mentioned the food, right? We talked about separating wheat from the... I wonder if that's how they make that crazy... olive husk steak that I had at Ascend that time.
Mm.
It's got to, I mean, you can't, there's got to be some sort of separation in that, right?
Sure.
Some winnowing factor. I don't know, man, but I'll tell you what, Ascend is good. And March is Taste Washington Wine Month, which normally it's a big, right, event Taste Washington is held, but that's the largest single region wine and food event in the country. But this year, teaming up with restaurants to offer Taste Washington to go, and Ascend is a big part of this, through Ascend at Home. They get some unbelievable, like really big, cool meals. So Catch of the Day in Chardonnay, March 8th to the 14th, Alder and Fruit Wood-Grilled King Salmon, or Miso Black Cod, and they got wine pairings for that. Same with the Barbecue and Syrah. Koji cured and smoked beef short rib.
Yeah.
Oh, you like that?
I love me some short ribs.
Why short rib?
They soak up so much of the stuff that they're braised in. It's
yes.
just amazing.
Because really at your core, Howdy's like a six-year-old. He just wants as much sugar
Give
in it.
Some
as
sugar
well.
On
right.
that thing.
And
Absolutely.
It soaks it all in there.
Yes.
So look, go read all about this. AscendPrime.com. You can enjoy Taste Washington Wine Month a little bit differently this year with Ascend Prime and Taste Washington to go. Or do yourself a favor, now that the weather's getting a little nicer, we've had some clear days, Brock, time to get all the way up that view. Soak in the view. At Ascend Prime, go to ascendprime.com.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
All right, little Blue 88 to get us back into some football. That's a lot of baseball talk. Great. I'm freaking pumped, man. I'm so excited. Like, I am ready for baseball. It's been a while. Like, my kids are ready. I really want them to figure out how to get some darn fans at the stadium because I would like to go to a baseball game sooner rather than later.
Yes.
I need that. I was realizing just how badly I need that. Like, a couple of man, I want to go to a baseball game a lot. So please get this figured out.
And based on attendance in April and years past with social distancing, you'd be fine.
What is the deal with that Bob Nightingale tweet?
What?
Where he said, oh, other than the Blue Jays, every team in baseball now is going to be able to have fans at the park.
Oh, it's because of the CDC.
But the Mariners aren't.
Right.
Correct.
Everyone else has
it's
said yes.
Well, the relevancy, we're working on relevancy.
And he just didn't bother to correct it. Like,
no, we're working
didn't
on
bother
it.
To correct all that. So yeah, anyway, I really hope that changes. Whoever's job that is to get it changed... Please do so, because I'd like to go to a baseball game this year. All right, question number one, Rod. 4 years, $160 mil for Dak Prescott. What do you think?
And $126 mil of that guaranteed, some $70 like right away, bypassing Russell Wilson's numbers. I think Dak Prescott took a page out of Kirk Cousins' book, which is a book that Mark Rogers would have loved for Russell years ago to have taken a page out of and utilized and leveraged the franchise tag beautifully. Kirk did it for 2 years in Washington. Everyone thought, wow, that's just a totally dysfunctional, irrational Daniel Snyder, bad businessman. And yeah, he benefited from it. And then remember, he got nearly a fully guaranteed deal in Minnesota. So as far as cash on hand and guaranteed dough, Kirk thrived. And I think Dak Prescott's team actually looked at that and said, let's do it. Dak, can you bet on yourself, your former fourth rounder? Right? Are you willing to bet on yourself? And he certainly was, and played the franchise tag out and got hurt. And I think, you know, in some ways, that gruesome injury played to his benefit, because they got to see and witness what the team was like without him and how much they actually missed him and how much he meant to them in every way, physically, emotionally, spiritually, just a leader and a guy that's beloved there in that locker room. And Dak held all the cards. Okay, go ahead, franchise me again. I'd be willing to do it, play on another $36 million deal, or we can rework it and make it a little bit more cap-friendly too. It turns out, by the way, it's 4 years. There's actually two option years on it. So it softens a little bit of the cap numbers in some of the salary cap ramifications of it. But good for you, Dak. He's a guy that I know you love, Salk.
I like Dak a lot.
You do. Yeah. You do. And if you're Russell Wilson and you're Mark Rogers and you're Mark in particular, you're like, gosh, man, I know it. I wish I could have convinced Russell to do that and play the franchise tag. They didn't, and Kirk and Dak did and benefited.
All right, question number two. If I have my numbers right, in the Pete and John era, the Seahawks have drafted one standout pass rusher, Frank Clark. Is there another one that I'm missing? Bruce Irvin had some success, but I think it's only been one that they've drafted. Why?
Because when you draft where they have drafted, it makes it really difficult. That is the excuse, and I think a very viable explanation. I went back and looked at LJ Collier's year, and I was really hoping, like, oh man, come on, find me some dudes after him that they were so wrong on LJ. Turns out there was a teammate of his, Ben Bonagu, that was drafted third round, has really done nothing. Now, late third and fourth round, you have my guy, Chase Winovich, that's got, I think, 11 career sacks. And in the fourth round, Max Crosby has got 17 career sacks. So that year, if you'd have taken a flyer on some guys that were a little more one-dimensional, they believed LJ could be Michael Bennett and play, you know, inside and outside and do a little bit more. But where you drafted, those guys were gone. Where you drafted in 2020, Brian Burns was a guy that I loved out of Carolina, or went to Carolina out of Florida State. I would have loved him. He went 16. You didn't come up in the draft and you didn't get him. Do you know who is the second
leading? What has he done since?
Do you know who Burns had a great year last year as a rookie, A-plus sacks. Do you know who was second in the league amongst rookies last year in sacks? Second in the league.
Alton Robinson.
Only Chase Young, 7.5. Alton's 4. We're second amongst all rookies.
He must have had a quarter of the snaps of Chase Young. He didn't play that much.
Oh, correct. Correct. Absolutely. And he had even opportunities to add to that at times. He had a couple sacks that went through his fingers. So the viable explanation is, if you want elite difference makers, you have got to draft them in the first 15 picks. Because those guys go. And they do. And we see it every single year, right? We've spent the last three drafts leading up to the draft knowing they need pass rush. And all the different names I gave you of all the different guys, Kalevon Chaseon, who, by the way, had a down year in Jacksonville, Burns, you know, the different guys that I've liked through the years are gone. They're gone by the time you get to pick 15 or 16. So, and this crew will not come up and has not come up in the first round and went and got somebody. They've done it in the second or third with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf and Jaren Reed, and been beneficial. But those guys, Mike, are largely gone in the first round.
All right, little question three to finish this up. You know, in the past, we've seen guys test free agency leaving here and then maybe be a little disappointed by what they saw. Curse, KJ comes to mind. Luke Wilson comes to mind.
Yep.
Anyone who you would see that happening to this year?
I'm going to be very curious on Shaquem Griffin, because Pro Football Focus called him like the most overrated corner, like some of these free agent lists. He is a free agent. He has played out his contract. They did not give him a new deal, right? You know, the old model, remember, with Earl and Richard and Cam and Bobby and Russ, all those guys, they knew what they had. They took care of them. And then it kind of shifted with Frank. And I think it shifted with Frank largely because of the misses with Malik and others that they were just in such a bind with draft capital that it was almost as much a have to rather than, man, this is not really what we want to do, but we have to do this and make this move. But with Shaquille, they looked at him and said, I mean, he's a good player, but we're not ready to reward him. We're not ready to give him an extension. And now he's going to go into a market, and it's not loaded with top free agent corners, because most of those guys do get signed to extensions before they ever hit the market if their team loves them. So I think it'll be very, very intrigued to watch Shaquille Griffin and see what the market says to him and whether there's a legitimate opportunity to bring him back into the fold here at a much more reasonable number than he's expecting.
That is Blue 88. I think there's probably a similar question to be asked anyway about Carlos Dunlap, who they let go, and I think that's under everybody's skin because he was good last year.
Oh, he was not just good.
He was very good.
He ignited the Clans. They couldn't rush the passer the first eight games, and then he ignited and connected the front end to the back end of the defense with Jamal, and Jamal got healthy, so you have to include Jamal Adams, who set an all-time record in the history of this league for a secondary guy with, what, 9 sacks a year ago. But the numbers are staggering with Carlos Dunlap and without him at that halfway turn when they made that move. So, yeah, there's, I think, quite a bit of angst.
But we all agree you can't pay a 32-year-old pass rusher $14 million a year, right?
Well, it would have been a $3 million bonus and then 10.5 next year. And yeah, with their constraints, that's not possible.
It's just they couldn't do that. So, nope. Okay, fine. Maybe he can come back and maybe they get him at a lower rate and we'll see. There are some other guys.
But remember, they have had weeks of these conversations.
Yep.
This is not a, well, we can't really talk to him. We can't work on a deal. They have had weeks and weeks and weeks since the season ended.
Right.
Yeah, to work something out here before the new league year begins next week.
I don't need Carlos Dunlap to be a Seahawk. Fine. I don't need that. But I do need that to be a position of strength for the team. Because for all the talk, this is why it's been bothering me. For all the talk of offensive line that has come here over the last couple of weeks, and I'm reading about Joe Thuney and Lindsley and all these guys that the Seahawks need to bring in to shore up the offensive line because Russell opened his mouth and started saying that's what they needed. And I think there is something to all of that. They do need a better offensive line. It hasn't been good enough. I think Russ is right. But a lot of that is also coming here out of what we saw in the Rams game and then in the Super Bowl, right? The Rams took apart your offensive line and the Bucks took apart the Chiefs' offensive line. And because of it, everybody's very focused on the importance of offensive line. There is also a second side to that, though, right? Because in order to take apart those offensive lines, you needed to have the defensive line to do it. Yes, the Seahawks offensive line lost it, but I would also argue that the Rams defensive line won it, just as the Bucks defensive line found a way to beat the Chiefs.
Just as the Bucks defensive line did, just as the Denver Broncos defensive lines did, just as the Seattle Seahawks defensive line did, just as the New York Giants defensive line. Do you want to continue down
this
road?
No, I think that I get that the offensive line's important, but the defensive line is probably more important over the course of the years. And so the problem isn't Dunlap necessarily, right? Letting a 32-year-old pass rusher go at 14, you don't have much of a choice. You kind of have to let him go. The problem is, Brock, and you gave some good excuses on some of this. You're just not getting enough from your drafts. Yep. You haven't gotten essentially anything, but certainly not much from Malcolm McDowell, Malik McDowell, Rasheem Green, LJ Collier, or Daryl Taylor. I keep forgetting that guy's name. He hasn't played. Neither of those two guys played a snap for the Seahawks, so it's a little hard to remember on their first names. Daryl Taylor. I mean, you haven't gotten anything.
Nope.
Of value from those four guys. So if you can't draft pass rushers and you can't pay them when you do, Frank Clark, then where are you?
Yep.
Well, you got to find a way for your four to beat five, not just for your five to protect against their four.
Well, in fairness, they would say 2 years ago, we got an incredible player in Jadeveon Clowney for a year. We rented a player. He had an unbelievable season, was a total difference maker, arguably the best player on our team.
He didn't have that many sacks. He didn't really get to the quarterback.
He was a tremendous, impactful player with takeaways, with rushes, with forced penalties. He was unbelievably disruptive. And, you know, they make a move and trade for him. Last year at the halfway point, they trade for Carlos Dunlap. So their acquisition part in the draft, you're absolutely right. There's no debate about it. Darrell Taylor was a risk, and it was a bust. Malik McDowell was a risk, and he was a bust. LJ Collier's not twitchy nor explosive. He's just mid lane. And Rasheem Green is the exact same way. He's just a very average player in this league without much explosion. So, you know, that's what you got. So now what? Ngakoue is a free agent. There's some other free agents. You're anticipating a bloodletting in this league. That has been the expectation, Mike. By the time we get to the podcast next week and the new league year will begin, I believe next Tuesday, Wednesday, that there's going to be a bunch of pass rushers and a bunch of free agents out there and a saturated market for Carlos Dunlap. And the Seahawks are betting that they know that market. Dunlap and his agent are betting on himself, and we shall see whether he falls in that first wave. Because if he doesn't fall in the first wave, I think there's an opportunity in the second wave of free agency to get a much more palatable number.
Are you still on the – are you with me that they're not going to trade Russell Wilson?
Well, now you're down to three teams. So the Cowboys are out. So you got the Bears.
Hey, Brock.
You got the Saints.
None of those teams work either.
You got the Raiders.
Let me be clear. None of those teams work either. You're down to zero teams.
Yes.
Yeah, Danny had a really good take on this the other day. I was listening to him and Paul, and he kind of went through like what deals he would even consider. I thought he was right on. He's like, okay, number one, Miami. Between Tua and the number three overall pick and another first-round pick.
And the future first.
Right, like maybe Miami could put something together in order to convince you to part with Russell. And I thought, okay, like something a package that involves a potential franchise quarterback on his rookie deal and the number three overall pick. I could think about that. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'd do that, but all right, that's a conversation starter for me if I'm John Schneider. Jacksonville, certainly, if they were going to offer the number one overall pick. I can't imagine why Russ would go there for that, but okay.
Well, he'd reunite with Daryl and Shoddy.
Okay, well, maybe.
He's playing to Urban Meyer, great leader, another college guy, college atmosphere.
And really good dude from everything I understand.
$100 million of cap space.
So, okay, maybe that's enough to convince Russ, but I don't see that. You'd have to.
But he didn't want to go to either of those places.
Right, you'd have to have a three-team deal. And that, maybe there's a way with Deshaun Watson, which definitely is going to require a three-team deal because there's no way Russ is going to Houston under any circumstances. But, okay, other than those three possibilities, getting Deshaun Watson, Tua plus a number three overall pick plus, or Trevor Lawrence, can you come up with another scenario?
No, it's not happening.
I can't come up with anything else I would even consider.
Nope.
So without, by the way, and none of those three are going to happen. So this isn't going to happen.
No, and Russell's number, his cap numbers, as far as what people are anticipating, that's the other side of this. Dak and Schefter kind of tweeting this from a league source that, you know, who knows more than anybody else? Who's on the head of the committee of revenue is Jerry Jones. And he knows what's coming with these lucrative TV deals, that they're going to be monster deals. And after a step back this year, they're going to go up, up, and up. And, oh, by the way, Josh Allen's going to make over $40 million a year, right? Mahomes is going to make $45 million a year.
Get that gambling money coming into the league.
And now Russell's deal for the next 3 years, much more palatable. Let's go. Let's go. You sign the deal. We like the deal. And, you know, it's not a rookie contract, but it's going to give us enough flexibility. Mm. So, yeah, I don't see him moving anywhere.
This is Brock and Sox. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, here we go. It's been a while, but we got all kinds of Twitter questions, Brock, from the old Twitter accounts.
People respond, Mike.
Of course they do. Any question, any subject. It's been a long time since we've done this, but we're ready.
I mean, you could argue answer the question, jerk, was the turn of the show.
Oh,
absolutely.
I mean, it was a big, it brought a little humor.
I always argue it was them letting go of Matt Hasselbeck. The moment Hasselbeck left, ratings picked up.
Next question.
Okay, here we go. This is a big one that came in from Mike Davidson, who says, hey, both Husky football and basketball teams are getting concerning.
Yes.
Lost recruits, lost coaches, lack of wins. Really felt like Hopkins and Lake here was a great new beginning. What has happened that we might not know about? What is going on with the Huskies, Brock? They're
pretty troubling. They're real bad.
Puka Nacua's leaving now to go to BYU.
Yeah.
Is this like
brother.
The Jake Heaps era when people are leaving to go to BYU?
He's got to play with his brother. It's got a family thing.
Dude,
going on there? Both teams are a disaster.
Yeah, not good. And I think the biggest thing is you had an opportunity with Emeka and JT, two of the biggest recruits in the history of the state, to say to Ohio State, you don't come into our backyard. That, you know, we believe we're building this thing that, you know, and Jimmy Lake tried. I mean, he tried to build a lot of rapport and relationship for years. And both those guys said, thanks, but no thanks, coach. I want to play big-time football. And big-time football is not in the Pac-12. And as much of an indictment on Jimmy Lake or the current standing of the program, it's, to me, from a football perspective, a bigger indictment on your leadership and the football programs and where football stands is the bottom of the Power Five. That's where you are. That's the landscape. And I'll stand on that. And I don't think there's much debate about it. Now, basketball is a little bit different because, you know, Hop went down the one and done road last year with a couple guys and ultimately, they weren't making the tournament, even if there was going to be a tournament. Mm-hmm. And that was...
And they're worse this year.
Oh, they're just atrocious.
Just dreadful, this year. Right?
Oh. Almost unwatchable.
There is no excuse for what Mike Hopkins has done to this program.
Yep.
I mean, that is... It is unconscionable to go through a season and not recruit a player.
It is a recruiting
not recruit one basketball player in a season.
How's that possible?
It's unconscionable. I can't even think of it.
I've never heard of that. What does he do all day?
I don't know. I don't know what they're doing.
Isn't that like what you do all day?
They sit there with his guys in year three, and they're terrible.
Part of the challenge is then, you know, and again, an excuse or explanation is, man, this transfer portal thing, there's like hundreds of kids in this transfer portal. And basketball just turns over every single year. And, you know, a couple of the kids that they did take in are just, they're not Pac-12 players. They're just very average local guys that went elsewhere, transferred home, and he's wrong. He's been wrong in recruiting, flat out, both in his high school talent, junior college talent, transfer portal talent. It's been a very – I think he's a good coach. I think his scheme can work. I think he's a grinder. I think he's got a good staff, Cameron Dollar. Those guys haven't gone anywhere. But flat out, their acquisition end of it, their recruiting end of it has been abysmal.
Next question.
They're in bad shape, man. But, you know, bow down. It's a great slogan.
Next
All right, let's see. This comes from Red Sox fan, Ad Jameer. You got offered Khalil Mack and two first-round picks for Russ, would you take it? No.
Nope.
Wouldn't even consider it. Thanks, but no thanks. See you later.
Nope.
Nope. Because how's that working out for the Bears? Like, why would I possibly want that?
Khalil is on, I think, the downside of his career. And you don't have a quarterback. And you draft into the team. Nope. 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 No thanks.
Next question.
Who wins the next championship in Seattle in their respective sport? Mariners, Seahawks, Kraken, or Sonics? Who's closest to winning a championship? Sonics aren't even here.
Ooh.
The Kraken.
Oof.
I think it's Mariners.
Oof.
I think it's the Mariners. I'll take the Mariners.
Are we talking an NFC West?
No, I know that's
championship?
Like you're playing roulette and black keeps coming up over and over and over again, and you're like, I'm going red. It's gonna come, and you keep playing red because eventually you know it's got to come up, and the next thing you know, you're out all your money. But I'm still taking the Mariners to win the next championship in Seattle.
Championship.
Championship.
Are we talking AL
talking
West?
Winning a ship.
ALCS
winning,
or World
winning
Series?
A ship.
The chip?
Yep.
The chip? The chip will be the Storm again. Or the Sounders.
Well, that's
but they're
true.
Not included.
They weren't in this question. I'm going Mariners.
It's the Seahawks.
It's the Hawks. You got Russell
Wilson. I don't feel
Wilson.
Good about it, but it's the Seahawks.
You got Russell Wilson. You got one of the five best players in the league. At the most important position in the league. So it's still the Seahawks.
Next question. Next question.
Let's see. Who wins a major? Their next major first? Koepka or DeChambeau? Did you watch DeChambeau? I was glued to watching DeChambeau over the weekend. I had to leave. It was right when we were going to the market to go see Uncle Howdy. He wasn't even there because he's in his bat cave or whatever. But we stayed an extra 5 minutes in the house because I wanted to see what DeChambeau did on the sixth hole at Bay Hill. Was he going to drive the green? That was nuts. That was so awesome watching him do that. That hole's crazy, this big. So if you don't know about
it's like 14 at TPC.
but
bigger.
It is. Yes.
It is. It's the varsity level of 14 at the TPC.
And over
Palmy Ridge. Correct.
Right. So the hole itself is a par 5. It's a 550-something-yard par 5. but you can go 340 carry over the water right to the green. Nobody's done it ever. But DeChambeau came really close. I mean, he went a little right of the green.
Yeah, he was still 80 yards from the pin.
Yeah,
so
I was
60
yards. I was kind of hoping he'd go a little closer.
He could have.
He had the distance.
He bounced over into the bunker. He absolutely could have.
He could have. It's crazy to me. First of all, I think he's really fun to watch. I just love the whole DeChambeau thing. But watching the way, I don't know, this to me is one of the craziest parts. So many guys hit those like little baby fades, right? Off the tee. And he will hit that. But he also doesn't mind, when he really just wants flat-out distance, he doesn't mind hitting a draw, and he just destroys them. It's crazy to watch.
Did you see the swing speed?
Yeah, it was like 2-something, right?
198 miles an hour? Ouch.
So crazy.
That's so cool.
I think he's really fun to watch.
He's got the Jim Thome swing.
And then he almost cried at the end because he had the whole Arnold Palmer thing. Like, I don't know. I know people don't like DeChambeau for a bunch of reasons, all of which are valid. But will you watch golf? Like, what? Here's the bigger question. What will get you to watch something
Kepka
that you don't
will never
watch?
Kepka and DJ will never. Their game is unbelievable. They're as boring as paint.
They won't get you to watch. But, like, what gets you to tune into something?
Spieth. Spieth Sunday meltdowns.
All right.
Of late, that's been what I've enjoyed. He's had a lead, like, on Sunday the last five rounds.
Dude, you're kind of being mean.
Poor guy just can't finish.
Hold on. He hasn't won a tournament since 2017.
Correct.
He had missed something like eight of his previous 10 cuts before this year. And now he has top five finishes in what? Four of his last five starts or three of his last four?
Yes.
Come on. You're going to start ripping him for not closing yet?
Yeah.
Watch him win the Players this weekend.
I hope so. But if he has a lead Sunday, I've got a lot of fear because it's been a disaster.
I wish we could clear up one thing on Jordan to everyone in the world who thinks that it's the meltdown at Augusta that is the end of Jordan Spieth. Because it's not. It's really unfair. He won the Open Championship after that.
Right.
He's won a major since then. That's a really unfair take, I think.
Okay.
He handles this stuff so well. I just love him, man. And golf is
so
much better.
So who gets me to tune in? Spieth gets me to tune in. DeChambeau gets me to tune in. Justin Thomas, kind of a tweener. He's immensely talented, like DJ.
I'm trying to take it bigger, though. Not just players in golf. I just like, in general, with sports that aren't like your local team is playing, what gets you to tune in to any other sport other than your local team playing?
Oh, gotcha.
Is it storyline? Is it personality?
Something has to be on the line.
Yeah.
If history's on the line in some way, then I'm very inclined to watch.
It's funny. That isn't it. That doesn't. I don't need that.
Sister Jean, I mean, Loyola Chicago's making it again, so Sister Jean for Kyle.
Right.
Like, she's 101 now.
He hates her.
Just 101.
Kyle hates her, though.
Yes, I know.
You think she's a selfish, narcissistic.
The most selfish diva that we have seen in the tournament.
Amazing.
She's 101.
Hey, so there's a question here about Logan. Did you hear this? Can you put my computer up for a second, Howdy? Have you heard how much Logan Gilbert sounds like Scott Servais?
Yes.
I think it's just a build-up process throughout the offseason and getting on the same page with the coaches and wrote a really detailed plan for what each month would look like throughout the offseason and where I would try to be by spring training time. And
sounds a lot like him. Maybe this is even more so.
I'm always going to say I'm ready. I'm confident, feel like I can go out there and play my best regardless of who's in the batter's box. But well, certainly his fastball play, the life on the fastball is just awesome. And
it was pretty nuts, crazy, right?
It's a pacing. It is totally the pacing.
Yeah.
Very, very similar.
Sounds similar.
Next question. Right.
Let's see. One more here?
One more.
This is always a good one. What are the best toppings for nachos? Just straight up. What has to be on nachos to make them great? I will say very clearly that the number one most important topping for nachos is sour cream.
Yep.
I like that.
Yeah.
With everything else, like, of course you have to have cheese, otherwise they're not nachos.
Guacamole.
Guac is probably number two.
Probably number two. Yeah.
But sour cream is what makes it. I'm basically eating nachos so that I can eat sour cream.
Yep.
If I could have, I would substitute sour cream if I had like some of that manufactured cheese, like not actual melted cheese, but like some of
nacho cheese.
Not specifically the handmade.
No, I know what you mean. The stuff that comes out of the gross.
I'd rather not have the pumpkin
at a ballpark.
But that consistency.
Yep.
I don't need sour cream if I have that.
That stuff's good. It's still not as good as sour cream. Sour cream is. It's with the whole
Let me give you a little tip on that, Howdy. Something I've tried here lately. Are you a Costco guy? I forget.
Oh, yes.
Have you had the artichoke?
It's an off-brand Kirkland brand.
Have you had the artichoke jalapeno dip?
No.
Yeah. So look in their kind of dip section, and it'll be by the hummus and everything else. An artichoke jalapeno kind of dip, and put that on your on your chips and melt it.
Wow.
You can have it. You can have it cold. You can have it room temperature. But you melt that on those chips. It's kind of what you're talking about.
Fancy.
It's almost, and it's, you know, it's kind of cream based. So it's got a little of that sour cream base to it. A little bit of a kick to it. It's pretty.
Let me go one more. Yeah, favorite city that you've traveled to that you would go back to by yourself and enjoy it with no existing friends or family there. That's hard. I don't want to go anywhere by myself.
Yeah. It'd probably be somewhere to fish or golf.
Just so you'd have something to do.
Correct. You'd have to have something to do for big chunks of the day.
But like, don't you want to do that with friends?
Yes.
But I guess if you're golfing, you just meet people.
You're going to meet
right?
new people.
You get paired up with people.
Yep.
All right. So like,
I mean, Cabo for me for like 4 days of golfing and the sunshine.
Just do that in Hawaii anywhere.
Yeah. Or Maui. Yeah.
But. I think most of the fun cities are fun with people.
Like, no question.
I mean, I'd want to go to Tokyo, Paris, places I love.
It's about relationship.
The answer for me on this one, though, I think if I have to answer, it's Sydney.
Oh.
Sydney, Australia. Mm-hmm. First of all, I'd move to Sydney tomorrow if given the opportunity to do so. It wouldn't take me a second thought. But you could do all of that there. You could meet people there. Like, I think it'd be Sydney. That sounds pretty easy.
Howdy.
Count me in.
Hawaii?
I think I could do Vegas by myself.
Howdy's Lake Stevens.
Yeah.
He once took a vacation. Remember when Howdy took his cruise around the San Juans for his honeymoon?
Stop. Barn. He's in the barn.
Oh, Anacortes, definitely. I could spend at least a couple of months in Anacortes without any friends or family.
Poor DJ, and it'd be fun.
All right. I guess we're done. Done for this podcast. A lot of Mariners talk, man. It was fun. I'm ready. I am. I'm really, really ready here, Brock, for some baseball to start. So we will. Are we back next week, or is this your next week?
We're back next week. Okay. Yeah, we're back next week.
Next week, and then sometime you have a week off in here somewhere.
I do.
All right. Well, we will be back next week. I think Kyle will return.
Hopefully
the whole
band
gang
can all
will
be,
all
back
be together.
Together.
How about that? All right. We'll talk to you guys next week. Until then, hey.
Barn.
See you, everybody.
Get to the chopper!